Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare,
the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.
Jones again! Goodness me!
The trash is picked up by Bobby Berlin.
Doyle! He's back! And he's back with a bang!
Here are your hosts, Richard Fleming and Connor McGahee.
Greetings, programs, and welcome to this edition of the Rapids podcast presented by Advocare from inside a sauna with Richard Fleming. I'm Connor McGahee. I'm just kidding. We're not actually in a sauna. It's just a very warm room here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, because I'm not sure they've adjusted to the warm temperatures we've been experiencing a mile high. Maybe not so warm in the desert. We'll talk about the Desert Diamond Cup coming up and the Rapids jersey reveal. We'll also hear from Bobby Berling and others here on this Rapids podcast. Richard Fleming, good day, sir. How are you today?
Yeah, very good. No, yeah, beautiful, isn't it? It's absolutely stunning. The sunshine, we're looking out onto the field here, and it's looking, as you would expect, a little patchy, but we're still, as we record this, 2.5 weeks away from the home opener, and I suspect that this field will be in tip-top condition by the time New England Revolution arrive here on March 4th. But just seeing that the stadium drenched in sunshine and the temperatures rising, we just want to hope that it's a nice warm day on March the 4th, and we can get the season off to a great start. But we are still very much in pre-season. Mm-hmm. And I know you want to talk about the Desert Diamond Cup and all of the antics there, and something that we've spoken about in recent podcasts, video assistant referee.
Came into play in the Rapids' favor this time.
Which came into effect. And
now explain to people, because you obviously weren't there, but we were listening to the stream, mm-hmm. and it's a 90-plus decision from Alan Chapman to award a penalty. Now, specifically, why would that situation have been eligible for the VAR?
Because it's as we were saying last week, it's the big calls they're looking to get right, and
making sure it was actually handled inside the box.
So,
penalty, right?
Was it a handball? Wasn't it a handball? And I think obviously other incidents in and around the penalty area. Was it in the penalty area? Was it outside the penalty area? So a penalty kick, one way or the other, given or not given, is a big call.
Mm-hmm.
So that falls into that category. Now, Alan Chapman, the referee, initially didn't call it. Three or four Rapids players kind of, you know, can we have a look at this? So Alan Chapman does the sign. He does the square television.
Or it's more of a rectangle, I believe. You know, 16 by 9 picture.
And he then sent it to the review, to the video assistant referee. Alan Chapman went across, had a look. That takes a couple of minutes, which are then added on. So that's added on to your stoppage time. And he points to the spot, and Dylan Power steps up, by which time the clock has moved into stoppage time.
Right.
Two or three Sporting KC players find themselves in the book as a result of their demonstrations. And Powers, as he normally does, he's right-footed.
Yeah.
And he sent the keeper the wrong way. But if you remember, the last penalty he took was at RSL, and he sent Nick Raimondo the wrong way. Went to, as you're looking at the goal, goes to the right.
It'd be staged right, I guess you could say, and
put it wide of the post on that occasion, but not this time. And in kind of testy conditions, it's pre-season, it's a friendly, you're preparing, it's all about, at this stage, certainly the opening few games of the Desert Diamond Cup, it's about fitness and about sharpness and about looking at different formations. But you know, it's still to try and get your team on the board and get them a point in a little mini tournament format. And as those that were watching could see, the wind was playing quite a part, and that was kicking into a stiff breeze. So, you know, kind of mentally you think, well, maybe I've got to strike this a little bit more. Maybe I've got to try and keep it low. I've got to get my head over it so that it doesn't deviate as a result of the weather conditions. So it was a good start from the Rapids. I think on the balance of play, I would say, if I'm being absolutely honest, Sporting KC probably had the better of the chances, had more of the dangerous possession. And you know, they took a lead just after half time with a header back across goal and over the head of Cody Mizell.
Mizell in there because
John Burner's still injured. Cody Mizell, who played for Charlotte Independence,
played the second half. Zach McMath had started the first half.
Yeah.
And a completely different 11 for Pablo from the first 45 to the
second 45. And I got a sense looking at those two 11s that there was a balance between the two. There was a sprinkling of trialists, a sprinkling of new players, and a sprinkling of the old guard, the regulars that you would expect to see in a starting 11 in both halves. Whereas Sporting Kansas City kind of put out a very, very strong side in the first half, which you could, and even the commentary team at the time was saying, this is pretty much like a first 11.
Yeah.
And then the second half, there were a few from Swope Park Rangers, from their USL affiliate, and actually it was those two players, Didich and Tyler Pasha, that combined to create the goal. So Sporting KC were not as strong second half, certainly a strong first half. But, you know, that's what you're going to get at this stage. And different coaches, different teams are going to be at different stages of their preparation, and they're going to want to try different formats. And obviously, there was kind of a clash of formats yesterday with a very strong first half, not so strong second half. But I think the Rapids had more of a balance about their two 11s. The only kind of shadow that cast itself across the Rapids on Wednesday was Jaime Siage, who hobbled out 81 minutes with what looked like a left ankle injury. I've not got an update on that. And obviously we'll know over the next few days as to whether he's a part of Saturday's game against New England Revolution, which is a 1 p.m. start. Again, you can get it on coloradorapids.com/live. And I think this one for me, the Rapids obviously play New York City next Wednesday, which will have some big name players, you would imagine, playing in that, just that little bit closer, 10, 11 days away from the opening game. And then an unknown to be determined opposition on the 25th. But for me, because of the fact that the Rapids open against New England Revolution, this game on Saturday, which will only be 2 weeks, it's incredible to think, only 2 weeks from that opening game, this one will be an interesting one to watch from a fan's perspective, because we know that these guys are going to be here just around the corner. But also, and again, it's something we touched upon last week, how are the two coaches knowing that they're going to face each other 14 days later? How are the two coaches going to approach it in terms of giving their players a tryout and looking at formations, but not showing your hand too much too soon?
Especially to coaches like Jay Heaps and Pablo Mastroianni.
Good friends. They were at
Have
Miami
been for
Fusion.
A long time.
They were at Miami together back in the late 90s. And obviously they've come through as former players that are now moving into that, or have moved into that coaching sphere. So that their journeys have been very similar. And I know, having, been down in Tucson a couple of years ago, and the Revolution's training field was right next to the Rapids. And so the players came in through the same gate. And Pablo and Jay Heaps would regularly have conversations at the end of training, and very cordial, looked like they're on good terms, good friends. But it's interesting, that all goes out the window, doesn't it?
A lot of fire between those two. Now, speaking of Pablo Mastroianni, he spoke to our team after the Rapids' first preseason game in the Desert Diamond Cup.
Well, Pablo, we are some way through preseason now. How is this compared to 2016, bearing in mind what a great regular season 2016 was? In other words, how do you gauge the success or otherwise of a preseason?
Well, I guess it's hard to say. You know, you never know until you won't know until the end of 2017 how the preseason went. But I think as far as gaining a good understanding of what we want to do in the attack, gaining a good understanding of the way we want to continue to improve our defense, and the camaraderie that's being developed on these long, long, trips away from families and that bonding, it's been fantastic. And we've learned something from every game, and I think that's the process for the next three games, is take something away where we can continue to improve and be in the best position to compete and get 3 points the first game of the season.
How tough is that then for you as the head coach, and obviously as a group of coaches, to say, well, this worked last year? I mean, is it as simple to say, well, this worked in preseason last year, then we'll apply the same for 2017, or is it every year is completely different?
I think it's completely different. You know, what worked last year is not going to work this next year. Although, again, we don't want to lose who we are as a team, the mentality of the group. Those things have to be everything that we do every time we step up on the field. I think if you want to get better, if you want to continue competing, you have to stretch yourself a bit more, and you got to be a little bit uncomfortable in trying to become a better team. And so it's not going to always be easy. And like I said, you know, if we go back to doing what we did last year, you know, I think that's being complacent, and there's no growth in being complacent. And so I think, like I said, the games in this preseason are for us as basically a barometer as to where we are and where we need to get to in order to be that team that was in great midseason form and competing for a playoff spot last year.
And how much of it, now you're in Tucson, how much do you look at other MLS teams and say, well, where are they? And is that an easy comparison to make?
Yeah, again, I think you can't place a lot on any kind of preseason scrimmage, any preseason game, because, again, I think from the outside, it's the result that matters. But from the inside of the group, it's actually the understanding that matters. And so if you look at other teams and they're firing, they can win all the preseason games and then not start well. I know last year we lost a couple big games, which are obviously disappointing. You don't want to lose. But from those losses, you get a great understanding as where you're deficient. And I think those are the more important aspects of preseason, is developing a good understanding of what you're trying to achieve on both sides of the ball and in transition. And I think we're working in a great way in gaining that understanding as a collective whole. And like I said, I think games will reveal a little bit more. And then hopefully for the first game of the season, where we have a very good understanding and we can approach that game with a lot of confidence and put on a great display and get 3 points.
So with that in mind, then, how successful was that game against Sporting KC on Wednesday in terms of applying what you'd asked of the players?
Well, yeah, I think there was some good passages of play as far as what we're trying to do on the attacking side in the first half. However, I think there was, again, with so many new bodies, I think there was a little bit of confusion on the defensive side, which is ironic. And you'd think, well, you know, what does the attack have to do with the defense? We just found it very difficult to regain possession of the ball and keep good possession to kind of impose ourselves from that perspective in the game. I think in the second half, we pretty much played in our attacking half of the field for you know, 80% of the half, created numerous opportunities. But the catalyst in all that was the defensive shape and the way we were able to pressure to win the ball higher up the field and kind of keep them in the cycle to where they couldn't get a hold of the ball. And so I think in both halves, there were some positives. And obviously in the first half of that game, you know, Kansas City put all their starters out, you know, and for us, it was two blended teams with a lot of college players, Boateng just coming off a airplane 2 days before. And so there's a lot of variables that go into it. But I think for the most part, the you know, and we talked about it this morning in the video session, and they understand completely as to what we're doing. But again, understanding it and then executing it are two different things. But I think we're moving in the right direction. And again, the game at the weekend against New England will, you know, reveal a couple other things that we need to continue to improve on.
Yeah, that game against New England this weekend, it's another game. I know it's another game in terms of preseason preparation, but with them being the first game of the regular season 2 weeks later, you want to be competitive. But how much as the coach do you want to show your hand?
You know, Richard, it's the New England Revolution game on March 4th is really one game. And so what I concern myself with is understanding that this is a long season. Understanding what you're trying to achieve is the most important thing for me, because once you have the understanding and you know why we're doing it and how it's being applied and where it makes sense to use it, I think those are the most important elements. And so I want to continue working towards that regardless if we're playing New England 2 weeks later, because again, that's one game. And I feel like if we can do these things right, at home, we'll put ourselves in a great position to win that game anyway. But again, I'm always thinking big picture, always thinking about making sure that through the long haul, we have a great understanding of what we're trying to achieve.
And finally, Pablo, your assessment of Nana Boateng, his first 45 minutes on Wednesday in a Rapids jersey.
Yeah, well, listen, I think I literally met him, you know, 2 days prior. It was a big ask to want to play 45 minutes. You know, I thought there's no chance. And he says, no, I want to play. I want to get in there. I want to get with the guys. I want to learn. I want to be a part of it. And so from that perspective, his mentality has been absolutely flawless. Great teammate, just a class act person. And I think from a footballing perspective, you know, he's been training with the team, but I think he's got a couple more weeks of, you know, a fitness to gain that full, sharp, dynamic movement stuff that you're only going to get when you do a long preseason. So, but as far as the football intelligence, as far as his commitment, as far as his ability to find a pass, make tackles, look forward, just some great, great aspects of his game that I think will be revealed here shortly when he joins the group and gets more comfortable with the group.
So you have New England Revolution on Saturday. You have New York City next Wednesday, which you alluded to. You will be there starting mm-hmm. on Monday to give us even more coverage on ColoradoRapids.com and beyond. And then you have another game, the final game coming up next Saturday, depending on how they do in these next two. Your assessment of the Rapids and where their roster lies, of course, there's always rumors about more signings, but how do you think that things will shake out for March 4th, and will there be any surprises that fans might see in that 18 and maybe beyond?
Well, I think defensively they look as if they've got their numbers. I think with Boateng,
and nobody expected a lot of changes there, obviously, because of the success last year.
No, I think we're all aware of where the deficiency is. It's the final third. It's the
it is not.
Third.
What are you talking about?
So I know that they are still looking. I know the club is still looking and is still considering some names, and those names I think will be players in the offensive third. And it's a tricky one because the turnover has been so limited. So the core of players that you have are pretty much the players that did so well last year. But we know that there's improvements that are being made across the league. LA Galaxy will look to be stronger. And I'm going to take the Western Conference. Houston will be stronger. San Jose, if you'd have said to me 10 days ago, I'd have put them as one of the sides that probably wouldn't make the playoffs. But they've made a bit of a charge.
Sure
they've
have.
Made three or four reasonable signings. Yeah. And so San Jose is suddenly beginning to creep into the mix. Freddie Montero, back in MLS
Vancouver.
So all of a sudden you're seeing moves that are being made by teams that weren't so strong. You're expecting Seattle to be strong. Portland, I imagine, will look
back
to react. Yeah. FC Dallas, again, will be strong. Sporting Kansas City, I'm not sure. Suni Saad, we saw, you know, he was introduced and he's back with Sporting KC. But you can never write off a side that got Peter Vermese in charge. And so, although the Rapids, with the players they had, did very, very well last year, improvements have been made by others that have seen that there's ground to be regained. It's not just bringing somebody in that you can say, right, he's going to be your 20 goals. I think you're bringing somebody in that also opens it up for those that you know have got the capability of scoring goals. You know that Kevin Doyle, with the right people around him, should have goals in him. Skelton Gashi should have more goals in him. Badgie, Hairston, I know they're quite high on this. Jaime Siage, see how that one pans out. Nana Boateng is somebody that, as he said, he's box to box. He likes to get in and around the final third as well as the defensive third. So he's another option. And then, you know, you bring on Alan Gordon as an option as well. So maybe just somebody that will kind of be that key to unlock the riches that the Rapids have that have not quite clicked over the last season or so. But do you want to be a Claudio Ranieri and be known as the Tinker Man? Do you want to tinker too much with something that has quite clearly worked? It's a fascinating part of the season, and how things kind of pan out during preseason. This is something we said to Jared Watts. It's so tough to kind of gauge. We saw Houston did very well on Wednesday in their opening game, beating New England Revolution by 2-0. Houston, again, looked like a side. They brought in bodies. They've got a new head coach in Wilmer Cabrera, who we know from his time here at the Rapids. So there's sides that are making strides, but you don't know. It's difficult to read too much into preseason results. The coaches know what they've asked of the players, and so they know kind of the direction that they're heading in. So all we can do is wait till March the 4th, I think, because this preseason is all about preparation. It's all about being ready. Now, be great, of course, to lift the Desert Diamond Cup, just kind of symbolically. Does it mean anything for a game in the middle of August? Of course it doesn't. There's no point beating New England Revolution 5-0 on Saturday and then losing to them in the home opener. You'd rather take that. So this is all about the preparation. It's all about momentum. It's all about peaking at just the right time. But for us fans, we're kind of looking at it like, what does that mean? You know, how has that player played? You know, is that the formation that we're looking at? So it's a lot of moving parts at the moment. I suspect, though, maybe not so much New England, but I reckon certainly New York City on Wednesday and absolutely a week Saturday in that game against potentially could be the Red Bulls.
Yeah.
and the Red Bulls are the second game of the season for the Rapids.
We'll be there in Harrison, New Jersey for that one on Altitude Sports Radio AM 950.
So it could be the Red Bulls on Saturday weekend, and I suspect that would be, as I said before, that would be pretty close to the starting 11 you would expect to see on March the 4th. So it's all about building and getting and hitting March the 4th in just the right frame of mind and the right kind of physical sharpness as well. And, you know, we saw a few examples on Wednesday against Sporting KC where passes were going astray. There wasn't quite that understanding. And I think that's what stood out for me first half. The dominance that Sporting Kansas City had was because these are guys that are familiar with each other. They've played alongside each other in more testing environments. You know, the likes of Benny Fellhaber, Dom Dwyer, Sinovic, Matt Beasler, Graham Zusi, all of those players, Roger Espinosa, those players have played for the last two, three, four, five seasons alongside each other. So there is a greater understanding. I think that was kind of lacking. There's a little bit disjointed at times with some of the Rapids, but that will come. That sharpness and understanding will come, and you hope that it's in time for the first game proper when there's points at stake.
Talking about sharpness, you talk about people who have been there before, and Bobby Burling has been there before. He was gracious enough to talk to us earlier this week.
Well, Bobby, just as we're recording here, it's a day after the game against Sporting Kansas City. What did you guys get out of that one?
You know, I think our first time facing an MLS opponent this preseason, it's always going to be a difficult one, especially against a side like Kansas City, who's got a good core group of guys who played together for, you know, 4 and 5 years. So it was a good test, to say the least. And, you know, we worked on some things offensively the first couple weeks and tried to implement those things. In the end, maybe, you know, a bit sloppy and not as sharp as we should be, which is, you know, normal this time of year. But at the end of the day, some good ideas and overall some good work defensively as well.
Without giving too much away, what has changed in terms of kind of stepping it up from LA to Tucson? And how, as a seasoned pro, do you kind of recognize those moments in preseason where you say, okay, this is where we're working on this now? And so what's changed in the last 10 days or so?
You know, I think it's a credit to Pablo and the staff just of realizing how long and drawn out preseason can seem at times, and kind of focusing on phases. You know, in Boulder, we kind of had the fitness phase of getting some altitude training in, and then as we moved to LA, we were on a good surface of grass and started implementing some of the offensive ideas that we'd like to see in the final third and how we get to that phase in the final third. And then here in Tucson, obviously there's, you know, 6 and 7 other MLS sides, and you kind of start feeling that buzz of how season's approaching and how closely, you know, March 4th is upon us here. And, you know, to see another MLS side and, for lack of a better phrase, kick somebody with a different colored jersey on or get stuck into a challenge, the competitive juices start flowing a little more, and you know, trainings are up in intensity. And again, a credit to the staff for not, you know, killing us out here, but at the same time realizing that, you know, time is of the essence now that we're in the final stretch here and to put together some solid performances against MLS teams that we'll be seeing in the near future.
You had Courtney Ford alongside you on Wednesday. What did you see of him in a kind of, well, quote unquote competitive game?
Yeah, no, I think we had a good few young guys in the lineup yesterday, in the first half anyway, and it was always good to see those guys perform, and maybe a bit anxious, maybe a bit nervous at times, which is normal, but at the same time, you know, held their own very well. And Courtney's an athletic kid and lots of ability. I thought we played pretty well together. The communication was good. Zach was organized as well as a back line, and obviously Mark Birch and Eric Miller have some good experience too, so I think it makes it easier for Courtney as well. But definitely a lot of potential with Courtney, and he's definitely taking it in stride, learning a lot, and you know, showing some real spark as well.
You mentioned earlier about Sporting KC, and it was interesting. They kind of played a very strong team first half, not so strong second half. That team in the first half, as you say, they've played together a lot. The likes of Fellhaber and Zusi, I think Sinovic was in there as well. Tamilia in the back line, Dom Dwyer, Suni Saad came on. So in terms of the cohesiveness and the understanding, that was always maybe going to be a little sharper from them.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and they've been down here for a couple of weeks now already, and just talking to some of those guys after the game, it was kind of interesting to hear, you how long they've been away from home. We thought we'd been away from home a while, but these guys have been down here for a couple of weeks before us and had, you know, a few days back home, and now they're back out here again. So I think, you know, they've played some more MLS competition and have been down here more frequently than us. But at the same time, you know, it was a friendly, but this, you know, we were out there feeling each other out as far as what kind of lineups they were fielding. And like you said, they fielded a strong group in the first half, and you know, we had a mixture as well. We have a strong team, we got good depth, and I think that's a tribute to the coaching staff as well for putting some young guys out there to see, you know, what they got this early on, and just kind of tinkering with some lineups and seeing what we have as depth wise.
Video assistant referee came to the Rapids aid on Wednesday. What are your early thoughts on that? I imagine as a player, if it's gonna have a decision that goes in your favor, it's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It was kind of interesting and ironic timing because we actually had the competition and referee meeting the day prior. And so as we were kind of going through some of these new protocols and how they were explaining some of the stuff and how it would be called, we didn't really know. As players, you just kind of, you know the rules, obviously, but you don't really know how it's going to play out. And I was on the sideline for the penalty in the second half, but in the first half, there was a questionable penalty possibly as well. And that one was reviewed and said it wasn't a penalty. That one would have been against us as well. So in the case of two instances, I think from what I was told that they got them right. And both circumstances were looked at and viewed at. And it's a process that obviously we don't want to take delays in the game, which, you know, baseball and football and some of these other American sports, I guess, have at times when a play is challenged. And trying to perfect that system, I think, will take some time. And they were very upfront with that as well, saying, look, this is a kind of a trial period to see how, you know, this progresses. And we're using preseason games. And, you know, obviously the feedback we get and the feedback we conclude is something that we'll take moving forward. So fortunate for us, it was, you know, something that helped us out in the end. And I guess overall in the day's work, that's what you want to see is the proper call awarded. So definitely we'll be happy with the beneficiary of that call.
And of course, the next game and of the three games to come, you don't know the final opposition a week on Saturday. But the next game, I imagine, certainly from where I stand, could be quite an intriguing game, bearing in mind it's against New England. And 2 weeks after that, it's the Revolution here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. How much is a player, and obviously you want to impress the coaches, but it must be a tricky one. You don't want to give too much away as a team, knowing you're going to face these guys in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you hit it spot on. I mean, it was funny. We were warming up today, and I saw Pablo and Jay Heaps talking just outside the gate. So I'm thinking, well, they're discussing something. And obviously, we see them in a couple of days here. And then, like you said, in a few weeks' time as a home opener. So it will be interesting to see, you know, what's implied and what lineups are thrown out. But at the same time, you know, it's more of an exercise, an extra exhibition to get guys game minutes, game fitness and sharpness, but at the same time, just trying to fine tune things before preseason. And, you know, I'd imagine both lineups would be different come opening day. But at the same time, you know, it's always good to get a look at an opponent and see where they stand.
And finally, I spoke to Kevin Doyle a few weeks ago, and similar to you, you know, you've gone through a few preseasons. Do they get any easier?
You know, I think mentally, yes, they do. You know, when you're young, you're eager and you're maybe haven't found a spot in the team, or you're not knowing what to expect as a young player coming into a new coach or a new team. And as you get older, maybe a bit wiser as well on how to, you know, manage your body and manage days where you may be feeling a little pull here or there or a knock here or there. But in the end of the day, it's openness with the staff and Pablo and, you know, our training staff as well to when you do have something pop up that, you know, this is a long process and, you know, 6 weeks of preseason and we need to nurse everybody differently and people have things pop up. And at the end of the day, I think openness and honesty is as far as where you stand and how you're feeling after, whether it's a training session or a double day or, you know, a match of 45 minutes or whatever the case may be. I think just having Pablo not being far removed from a player, knowing what it takes is a toll of the preseason on your body and mind, you know, and off days are given. And we definitely take those with the team and team in mind and getting out and enjoying each other away from the field and meeting new faces, meeting new people. So all in all, it's been a great, great camp so far. And hopefully these last three games, we can put together some solid performances.
Back at Dick's Sporting Goods Park with Richard Fleming and Connor McGehee. This is the Rapids podcast presented by Advocare. And I know that you're listening all over the world. And we actually have evidence of this, we're able to track where you listen to, not obviously individually. This isn't
we're not kind of set up.
This isn't Big Brother by any means, but we have numbers, data, and Richard, you asked me the question before we started. Mm. Where do you think we get the most listeners from? The obvious answer to me would be locally, but there's also some surprises on that list.
Some of the countries that you
Speaking internationally.
Yep.
I wanted to say Albania. Is that on the list? Did it make it?
It is not on the
And the only reason I say that is because no matter where we go, there's always Albanians there seeking out Emperor Gashi.
Absolutely, but they are not on the latest list. They have been.
All right.
That is a country that has been tuning into the Rapids podcast, but obviously US is top.
Yes.
Second is the United Kingdom.
And it's because they have you. I mean, they miss you. They want you
back.
Any sort of dose of Richard Fleming?
I used to listen
to him on the BBC.
I do have family.
I miss him.
But some of the surprising was Spain. There's quite a bit in Canada, Australia, a few of the European countries that leap out, Italy, the Netherlands, France, Denmark.
Mm.
Sweden's not on there, which obviously with Axel Schubert.
Yeah.
But the one that surprises me, South Korea.
How about that? How about that?
We have people listening to the Rapids podcast in South Korea. So I can't even begin to try and explain that one. But that's the reach of soccer. I think that's the growing reach of Major League Soccer. They have an international audience now, and the games are going out to like 150 countries around the world and territories. So it is a league that's expanding in terms of its footprint. And it's obviously this year with 22 teams taking part in the 22nd season, it's expanding literally as well. The attendance figures are up, and we will definitely have 23 teams in 2018, maybe 24. I can't see MLS looking to move back to that odd number of Western Eastern
and
Conference.
Don Garber
again
has even said that publicly, that he doesn't like odd numbers when it comes to conferences and teams overall. So
the league is
I'm waiting for an announcement
bigger
to happen literally any second.
Yeah,
now.
And
it hasn't come.
I just got an inkling that it's going to
be Miami.
Because there's, as I said to you previously, there's no other kind of imminent franchise in the frame. We saw those 12 franchises looking for the additional four once we've got to 24 to take us to 28. And I've not seen, there might be a surprise that comes out of left field. I don't know, but I suspect LAFC, which of course would comfortably slide into the West, and Miami, which would comfortably slide into the East. So I suspect that'll take us to 24 for 2018.
It was interesting because I was talking to somebody who is from Detroit, and they were talking about the landscape there and what the building would be like. And the owner, the primary owner of the Detroit MLS franchise would be, is Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he has invested a lot of money into the downtown Detroit infrastructure to build anything from government buildings to office buildings to residences and beyond. Of course, the new Red Wings facility will be downtown as well. The Pistons are thinking of moving from Auburn Hills into downtown. And I've seen a lot of things publicly by Don Garber that said that Detroit is very high on the list for whatever reason. And it's, I don't know why, but I think like something like that may come out of that left field. But you're probably right that it's going to be Miami being team number 24 in Major League Soccer. And how symbolic is that? You have LAFC from this coast is number 23, and then you have Miami. Two very similar sort of markets, I guess, and sort of glamorous places. And that would be very symbolic and makes a lot of sense for Major League Soccer.
And when you look at it, and when you sit in on some of these symposiums and these workshops and these meetings that they have, where they kind of break down what goes into selecting a franchise, and it's very complex, it's very drawn out. There's a lot that goes into it. Clearly political support locally, you need to have the support of the local community, television audience, the market that they're moving into,
the facilities.
You look at the fan base. You look at, you know, whether there's a need, whether it can be sustained. So it's not straightforward, and it's incredible, really, when you think back to the original sides, the original football clubs in England, and where they grew up and how they grew up. And a lot of it was very simple. It was It was born out of a need of recreation and leisure.
School-based, you know.
It was during Industrial Revolution. Right. So you look at the areas of England where the original teams came from. So the Midlands, mm-hmm. and the Northwest, the kind of the Blackburns and the Burnleys and the Boltons, where it was very much working class, and it was because there was a need for recreation. The middle classes had their rugby, and yeah. and the working classes needed something else. And you accelerate.
Not everyone can play polo either.
Well, absolutely. You accelerate over 100 years, and it's not straightforward. It's absolutely not straightforward. The process is not just about whether the fans want it. It's so much more complicated and so much more convoluted. As I said, coming back to our original point, 22 teams this year, 24 potentially next year. And the Rapids are very much part of that. And they're going to be part of a very, very competitive Western Conference, and in turn a much more competitive league going forward.
Before we turn our attention to the end of this podcast, one last thing to get to, and that's the Rapids 2017 alternate kit was unveiled yesterday, which was Wednesday, and it is a little similar to the one that exists now. It's a gold body with blue sleeves, and there's a new Colorado C at the bottom. The 5280 is on the sleeve as well. It's a sharp-looking kit. Rapids got a lot of credit the first time around for mm-hmm. embracing the flag of the state of Colorado, and it was a good look. And just some tweaks to this one, the blue sleeves being
and the
one
buttons.
Of them, and the buttons, which is a red button, which the explanation on that was red button. Because why not? Why not do a red button? It does look pretty sharp. The button is something that's gone around the league. A lot of other teams are doing that on their kits as well. It's coming from Adidas. But do you like it?
I love it. It's bright.
Yeah.
The only issue I have with those kinds of jerseys is that we saw the video wonderfully put together by Alex McGeorge. We've seen the video. And the players pulling the jersey over, which is fine
mm-hmm.
because they're athletes, and there's not a lot.
You don't
of,
look like that in the mirror, do you?
There's not a lot of give in those jerseys.
No,
it basically,
is not.
As they say, it shows slim all
fit.
The it
it's
shows all the nooks and crannies when you pull that jersey. So, look, if you're a little bit like me, and kind of that middle age spread is spreading, you might want to go a size up, so it's a little bit more baggy. Because if that clings,
yep.
There's no hiding place.
You see everything.
There is no hiding place, but it's sharp. It's absolutely sharp. It's a sharp gold, and I think the blue and the blue sleeves and the long sleeve gives it a real vibrancy as well. So it would be interesting to see if we get to see that
second game
at Red Bull Arena.
Because, New York Red Bulls, usually they wear white at home, so why not? But then again, if you wear white with I'm trying to think. Because, they were here last year, and we wore burgundy, and they
but
wore
they have
white.
Red, then, they have red. They have red in that jersey, and you just whether that's
there's also yellow as well
to,
in there.
A little close
well.
to burgundy.
Big yellow sun in between two red bulls.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
We will see. Well, we start with two Eastern Conference sides in the Revolution, the Red Bulls, and two sides that one definitely we're going to meet in Tucson, and we could meet both of those as we wrap up preseason down in the desert, and then we head back to Colorado and get ready for that game against the Revolution in Major League Soccer on the 4th of March. And we'd love to see people here. Go to coloradorapids.com or call 303-825-GOAL. Get your tickets for that game, and let's get the new season off to a flying start, because New England have kind of had our number over the last few seasons. I remember here 2 years ago, Lee Wynn and Agudelo getting some goals. Lee Wynn from the penalty spot, Agudelo with a very good goal. Then beat us at Gillette Stadium last year.
2-0.
And if we remember, going back to 2014, where they won 3-0 at Gillette Stadium. Thomas Piermaier was sent off.
That's right.
Lee Wynn scored from the free kick. And that was the result which then triggered the winless streak that took us through to, I think, the 4-0 win against FC Dallas.
I thought we said
FC
we were
Dallas.
Never going to talk about that ever again.
We did, didn't we?
Yes. We did say that. How
yes.
dare you?
So, in other words, we owe the Revolution.
There's a bit of payback,
and hopefully on the 4th of March.
And time is definitely up on this edition of the Rapids Podcast. Fleming on his way to the desert. Tucson, Arizona is his next stop. Safe travels to you, sir. Stay tuned to coloradorapids.com/live for the game on Saturday, Wednesday, and the following Saturday We have a full crew down there covering preseason as the Rapids prepare for the 2017 regular season. Two of those games are going to be against New England Revolution. For Richard Fleming, I'm Connor McGahey. Thank you for listening around the world to the Rapids podcast, from South Korea to Spain to the good old USA. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, bye-bye.
The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.